or the following: wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn.
Phone lines are open for you, Mark.
Thanks, Gil. Thanks a lot.
That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. I was going to provide you the entire Salem family this morning. First time since 1980. Well, never. First time ever. And we started radio in 1988 that we were here all together.
I think we might have done it a time or two.
The whole family?
I don't know.
We've done it at least one other time, maybe.
Oh, well, what do you
know? Well, look who rolls in.
Yeah.
Good morning, Peach.
Yeah. Hello, honey. You know, if I were you, I'd just take my microphone and just beat that thing against the wall. Why? Get a little closer to your mouth.
So we can hear you breathe.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Easy. Oh, boy, this will be a long day.
Where have you been?
Had to fix my garage door opener.
You've been working on that since yesterday.
Well, I know, but I've got a super tight schedule, and, like, I had a two-hour period this morning, but I got her up.
You got it working?
Yeah, it's working.
Is your mother-in-law helping you?
No.
Okay.
She broke it, but she didn't help me.
Oh, boy. Well, this morning, you guys all know that I had to take the big truck down to a car show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First of all, you parked it in the very back shop. Then you parked everything we owned behind it.
Yeah, we did it on purpose.
So I really appreciate that. I was supposed to be there at 8, and we got there 8:20, 8:30.
I think it started at 7:30.
No, it did, but they said I don't have to show up till 8.
Oh.
Yeah, between 7:30 and 8. So we were okay, but until we got here and everything was packed behind it.
Yeah. Gil, are we still transmitting over there?
You are.
Okay, I'm just checking. Nevertheless, so we took it over there, and there was a lot of guys there with Ferraris.
Uh-huh,
really, yes, yeah. All them really fancy cars. So when I rolled in, they're all protecting their cars. they don't want the big truck close to their cars.
Yeah, one guy said, can you set the parking brake, please?
Yeah. Yeah. So we were parked right next to some hot rods, and he goes, you did set the parking brake, didn't you? I said, it rolls on its own every once in a while. I said, don't worry, it'll stop on the next car. And they're all laughing. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, you have four of us, and we've been in the repair business at least 39 years, almost 40. January will be 40. And, Andy, how long have you been in the business?
Too long.
Alan, you're next, so plan for it.
Okay.
All right, how long have you been?
Like 9 months.
Yeah, you just started.
Fresh out of jail.
Yeah. Anyway, Alan, he does the performance side of the shop, so he deals in diesel, so he should be able to handle your diesel. How high can I lift it? What can I do? What not to do? And no, we're not going to take the diesel exhaust fluid system off your car. We're not going to touch that. So is that not the number one question or close to it?
Yeah, we get a lot of that.
So the DEF is a diesel exhaust fluid. It's an emission control device, and everybody believes that their diesel will turn into a romping, stomping, funny car if you take the DEF system off of it, and that's not necessarily true.
No.
What are you shaking your head for? Yeah, it is true?
We don't do it, so I don't know.
Oh, okay. Oh, jeez.
Either of your cars? Oh, both of your trucks don't have DEF, so never mind.
No, neither one of them came equipped with the DEF.
Yeah, no, I know. That's what I mean.
I bought the 12. Yeah, because that's the last year that they didn't have DEF.
But yours are both emission compliant.
Yes.
Oh, boy, that was quick.
That was a really quick, yes,
of course.
Both of ours are emission
compliant to where they're registered.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. Mine's at the ranch almost all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what, 6 days a week?
Yeah,
six days a week. So,
whatever you say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alan, get your mic up on your lips.
It's fine. I talk loud.
he does.
I'm looking at the scale, and it's not fine.
I'm telling you, okay. It's fine.
Okay.
You're hearing my breathing.
He doesn't want to eat it.
Oh, he doesn't want his tears breathing. This is how.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, so all right. Auto Dynamics in Sun City is the largest and most trusted shop there. It's family-owned and operated since 1982. Chuck Knighty started it. Now Derek, his son, is running it. And there's been a significant difference in quality between Derek and his dad, Chuck. Of course, I've known Chuck since 1968, so I can say that. But that's not true, and you know it. At Automotive Dynamics, they have staff, they have technicians, and Derek's trying something that's kind of new in our industry. His staff, his service writers and mechanics are not paid a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. So therefore, there's no motivation to sell you unnecessary parts or repairs. So if you're looking for a great shop in Sun City, I recommend Automotive Dynamics on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or problem, 602-508-0960. And we've got the air gun running, which means somebody on the
that
line.
That was the air gun?
Yeah, we can. You know what?
It's got a serious leak. Oh, there we go. Okay, that's better. Yeah. Before it sounded like you need to be oiled.
Jeez. This is going to be a bad deal.
I was wondering whose mouth that came out of.
Me too. Like, oh, am I snoring?
Listen. We used to have the doorbell.
Yeah.
You know that people complained because their dogs would bark.
Yeah.
So Gil and I came up with the gun. Now, Gil,
just needed to turn it up a little
just
bit.
A little bit more, Gil. Just give us a... Yeah. There you go.
Much better.
Okay.
Much better.
All right.
We would have needed the back end. We just got the...
Yeah. All righty, Gil. Who's zitting on the line there?
That would be Paul.
Paul, good morning to you. None of us have been good drinking, morning. I promise you.
Hi. I have a Dodge 2001 Ram truck 1500.
Okay.
And the engine light came on, and in front of my check, and the code is P0443, which means evaporative emission system, closed control valve circuit. And somebody told me to replace a gas cap, and I did that, but the engine light still on.
Okay. Well, the engine code doesn't tell you how to fix the car. The engine code tells you where the problem's at, and so let me give you an example. Your emissions code says the problem is in Ohio, and we have to go to Ohio and find out what city, what street, and then what address. So, you know, Paul, you can get on the internet. There's all kinds of people that will help you with your problem, but most of those people don't know their butt from a hole in the ground with respect to car repair. And you're going to spend your money having some bozo in Texas tell you how to fix your car. So it's not a good idea to do a popular, vote, get on the internet. And then you can go to YouTube University, and they'll help you out as well. Here's what you need to do, and this is what happens. If you take your car into the shop, the diagnostic charge will be a whole lot less than guessing from now until the time, you know, your birthday comes around. So they're going to go in and look at what we call serial stream data. It's what's going on. Now, the kid at the auto parts store doesn't have this $8,000 piece of equipment or $10,000 piece of equipment, so we're going to watch what's going on. If the vent solenoid comes on, but then the gas tank doesn't tell the computer that it sees a vacuum, then the problem is either the vent solenoid's not coming on, or the vent sensor in the tank is not seeing the vacuum, or there is no vacuum. So then we go in and determine what's going on. Because, see, we want to suck the fumes off your tank, and we want to burn them again. But that's only one of maybe four or five systems that code has to do with. So, like I said, you can replace the dump solenoid, you can replace the vacuum sensor, you can replace lots of parts, but the diagnostic's going to be cheaper than you trying to guess. But certainly it's up to you.
Okay. You have a shop on the west side that you recommend?
Are you anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School?
I could go there.
Okay. Well, Larry Harker's Auto is owned and operated by Ellen and her husband, Bob. And Bob runs a shop, and Ellen's who you'll meet at the front counter. And there's no question in my mind, Bob is one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met. He might even be better than me. So I think you should go there and bring your, tell him what code you've got. He's going to say, we're going to spend X, you know, like at my shop, we say 75 to 150 and we'll call you. But we've been able to diagnose well into that range. And then they'll call you with the repair. So you'll have three parts of the bill, the diagnostic, the part, and then the repair. Now, here's the good news. Sometimes it's $82.50 to find it and $2 to fix it. Don't count on that, but that happens sometimes.
Yeah, I just want to fix it. It doesn't matter.
Okay. All righty. Well, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Ames School.
I'm sorry, what's the name of the shop again?
Larry Harker's Auto.
Okay. And then you say 38th Avenue and what name?
It's 38th Avenue and Indian School. 38th Avenue and Indian School.
Oh, okay. Great.
All righty.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck to you, Paul. Good luck to you. That's we get a lot of that, don't we, Andy, mm-hmm. when they come in and what do they say to you? Let me guess. I've got this code, and I've replaced this, this, and this, and this, and this.
Yeah.
Inevitably.
Yeah, most of the time.
Now, what percentage of the time you two do we actually, it costs you $82.50 or something like that, and then they just plug in the vacuum line that's come off underneath the truck or whatever.
Deteriorated or something.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I could put a percentage on it. Maybe 30%,
okay.
Something like that, yeah. where it's a cheap, easy fix. The other day we had one come in with a misfire that the coil was unplugged for whatever reason. It had come unplugged on the injector, the connector either going to the injector or going to the coil. I can't remember. And it just wasn't snapped all the way in.
Okay.
So, I mean, stuff like that.
Yeah, and we've gotten them where they have multiple, like, evap codes. And, you know, we found the gas cap loose, so we start there, clear the codes, tell them to drive it, bring it back if the light comes back on, and kind of do a process of elimination.
Now, in fairness, too, I mean, evap codes, I don't want to say a lot of the times, but some of the times are gas cap. I mean, it's not a bad $12 guess in that situation.
Okay.
In that situation, but that one, that's usually small evap leak, not purge valve. I mean, that one was a little bit more refined into what it was talking about.
But we can't necessarily see the size of the leak with our scanner.
No, usually it'll say small or large evap leak.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But it's
and there'll be different codes for each
of them.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is true, but you can't count.
No. Yeah. No, we've got to smoke it usually.
With the gas cap, you don't always want to buy the cheapest one. That's another thing. We see that a lot. They buy the cheapest, most inexpensive one, and then, you know.
You mean that $8.50 one he just mentioned? $12.51?
Yeah, well, some of them are really particular. I think we see them more and more where you have to get factory gas caps. That's what works best.
And that's probably not a large period of time because Stanton makes a lot of the caps. So we can still buy the cap, but we can buy it in a different name.
Mm-hmm.
But the shop is stuck with the quality of the cap. So if you stick a cap on there and it doesn't work and you're adamant that the cap is the problem, then the shop has to get the next level or go get one from the dealer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that happens a lot. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're happy to discuss your car problems with you. All you have to do is give us a call. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Let's see what time it is, 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem, Alan Salem, Andy Salem, and Renee Salem all here helping you out with your car problems. And let me tell you real quick about a great shop in Mesa. If you don't have a good shop, the only shop in Mesa that I really suggest that you use is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They've been around a very long time. It's a family-owned operation, and they're probably into their second and even maybe third generation. I know that the Thompsons and Vivian family has been in Mesa since the mid-60s, so they've been around a long time. This Thompson's Auto Repair has been in the same location since 1970. Brian and Thelma own and operate Thompson's Auto Repair. They do light truck repair, maintenance services. They do motorhomes. They do that kind of stuff. They have ASC certified technicians, and they have friendly reminders to let you know when your vehicle may be due for service, so you need to look at your mileage and the time. But it's really easy and really convenient to keep your vehicle in tip-top shape if you try Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street, just east of Stapley. Wayne, good morning. How can we help you?
Well, I have a 2000 Chrysler Town and Country. It has a 3.8-liter engine, which is probably not germane to the problem. But I have intermittent starting problems. Occurs. I turn the key on. Of course, at the on position, everything works, radio, you know, so on and so forth. When I turn it to the start position, it's just nothing. No clicks, no nothing.
Okay.
Not a battery problem. It appears that sometimes when it sets like a day or so and it completely cools off, because I had been driving it prior to the intermittent problem, then it starts.
Okay.
And we have not been able to duplicate it when you take it to the shop.
Okay. Wayne, let me ask you a question. Do you have your radio on in the background?
No, I'm in a store.
Okay. Fair enough.
Can I call you back?
No. You're fine. So what we do is we have an echo, and we can't decide whether it's on the radio station end or my end. That's the issue. So it's no real big deal. It's no problem at all. Nevertheless, this could be a couple of things. When you have no click, I need you to turn on the headlights. And before if you hit the key and nothing happens, turn on the headlights. They should be white and bright. Now, two things happen when you start the car. Number one, the solenoid activates, and it turns on the starter. But the solenoid's going to make the lights just lightly dim, but you're also going to hear a click. And if the starter doesn't get the power it needs, then all you're going to do is get a click and nothing. If you hit the key and nothing happens, it's almost always a neutral safety switch, or it's going to be a starter solenoid. How many miles are on your van?
132,000.
Okay, have you ever had a starter or a solenoid put on it in 130,000?
Yes.
Okay.
Last month.
Okay.
Same problem still persists.
Okay. Sometimes what happens is it's a battery connection, and that's why I want you to look at the headlights, because if you have a bad connection and you hit the key, if you have a bad battery connection, and it's real easy to say you don't, but it happens all the time, then the headlights are going to go completely out, and then they're going to come back on slowly. Or they're going to go completely out and come back on fast. So those two things help us diagnose the starter. But I'll tell you the easiest thing to do, Wayne, is go to marksalem.com, and print out FAQ 28. I'm pretty sure that's it. FAQ that says no start, no crank, no click. But there's three things have to happen. If the headlights don't change intensity, then we're not even talking to the solenoid. If the headlights go out or go down and come back on immediately, then the solenoid's working but the starter's not. If you hit the key and the starter's not working but drawing excessive amps, then the headlights dim down a lot and then they come back on slowly. But a bad battery can make them come back on slowly. So it's all about the headlights, and we're using the headlights as a voltmeter. So when you hit the key and the solenoid works, it should go from like 12.5 to maybe 12. If the starter isn't hitting, then it should go from 12.5 to maybe 9, 9.5, 10. If it's a bad connection, you hit the key and it'll go from 12.5 to nothing and then slowly come back on. So if you just print out FAQ 28, it'll guide you, but you're going to need to watch the headlights. Remember, they got to start out white and bright. They can't start out in yellow or anything like that. Okay? One other thing.
I've had
who changed
the
starter?
Replaced also.
Okay. I know you've had the battery tested, but you've got a new starter and a solenoid, and you've had the battery tested, with the exception of one in a million key ignition key or neutral safety switch, I mean, those are really far out there.
I had a 2-week-old battery the other day go bad. A young lady had it replaced elsewhere, and it had gone bad. It was 2 weeks. No, it couldn't be the battery. Well, it was the battery, and, you know, so it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, and then it's a sophistication of the level of equipment, too. You test the battery typically with the cables off of it. So you pop both cables off of it, and you lose all your presets, your radio presets and all that jazz. But usually we test the battery all by itself. So we don't want any draws on it or anything like that. And a lot of times the equipment that they have at Auto Parts Store is Fred Flintstone equipment that was, you know, something we used in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s.
Sure.
It's not necessarily something that we would use today, but obviously the equipment we use today is far more expensive.
The equipment we use today, too, is there's 6 cells in a battery. And every once in a while, we'll get a single cell that goes bad. So every 6th time or 7th time or 5th time, it won't start. Ours has the ability to go in and kind of each individual one. So they don't have that. They just take kind of an overall surface charge on it.
And then that one cell will degrade the other longer it sits there. So sometimes you say, hey, it starts up just fine, but if I let it sit there 3 days, it doesn't start. Well, then the test that we and other shops are offering you would be able to pick that up.
2 minutes.
So.
Okay. Well, actually, I said the battery is a new battery. They put a new battery in the same time they put a new starter in, and they replaced one of the terminals on the positive cable.
Okay.
On the car, but we still have the problem.
Okay, it's their problem now. You've paid for the diagnostic. They guessed on the starter. Right. Clearly, that wasn't it. They guessed on the battery. Clearly, that's not it. They guessed on the positive cable, and clearly, that's not it. So,
right.
That FAQ 28 will help you describe
help them.
To them, mm-hmm. and if they okay. understand voltage, and then last but not least. You remember that one guy that had an intermittent start, and we hooked up a series of lights, and we had 3 lights on it. The first one said that the battery was okay. The second one said the solenoid was energized, and the third one said the starter's energized. So whatever we didn't have, we knew that was a problem. Well, he'd hit the key, and all 3 lights would work. And so that means we have power going all the way to the starter. Well, what happened was is the solenoid was defective, and if you got down there and tapped it with a hammer, it would start every time. But if you didn't tap it with a hammer, it'd only start once or twice out of 5 times. So sometimes we just got to give the customer a hammer and say, tap gently the solenoid or the starter. Now, if your wife is with you, have her sit in the driver's seat and hold the thing to the start position. You get out with a hammer, tap gently the solenoid, and then a little harder on the starter. And if it pops and runs, then the starter's bad. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Good luck to you, Wayne. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, we're happy to help you. You've got 4 people here, and we probably have between all of us 40. We probably have 100 years of car experience between the 4 of us. Wouldn't you say?
No.
Okay. Well, just try to agree with me a little sooner, okay? 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Alan here is my son, Andy, my daughter, and my wife, Renee, and we're all here to help you with your car request, your car problems, your car questions, stuff like that. So you're welcome to join us if you want, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and that's the phone number. And let me do a little bit of business, and then we'll take your call. Kurt's Automotive Repair is a shop at I-17 and Bell Road. He's been a friend of mine for many, many years. And he's a long way away from me. So he's a long way from me. So I send people to him when they call me and ask me car questions and problems that they're having with their car. If he's the closest one, and I mean to tell you, sometimes I think that he has a magic wand because he really pulls some cars in that other people haven't been able to fix, and he can. So he's a Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner, and that should tell you all you need to know about his ethics. He's been around since 1987, and he works on domestic import in both gas and diesel. And they have ASC certified technician, and Eric and Jeff are both masters, as well as Kurt's a master tech. And so you have 3 very seasoned guys there if you live in the area of I-17 and Bell, and that's Kurt's Auto Repair. So Andy, when you're up at the front counter and you're dealing with people, when they come in and describe a problem, tell me the difference between men and women.
Oh, man. Well, some men don't want to deal with me.
Yeah.
Let's start there. No.
And in spite of the fact you probably know more about cars than they do.
Yeah. No, it's you get it on both sides. I mean, there's women that come in that have been told by, you know, their dad or their boyfriend or their husband of what's wrong with the car, or there's men who just say, this is what I want fixed. And so I think it's on both sides of the, you know.
And that's that. I mean, I've been around a lot longer than you, and I've been on the front counter of something since, you know, 1968 when I was in high school. And from that point, pretty much with few exceptions that whole time. And in it's most of the time, in my opinion, the men come in and tell you, they give you like a snippet of the problem.
Yeah.
Then they start telling you about all the things they've done to it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, well, we know it's not that.
Yeah.
So it's going to be something else. How many times have you had somebody come in and the technician says to you, just about everything on this car is brand new? And maybe they had an intermittent starting problem. Maybe mm-hmm. they had an evaporative cove problem. Mm-hmm. They had that. I used to see that a lot.
Yeah, we still see it. It's definitely there. You have a lot of people that a big one is they'll come in and they'll say they want an alignment. And so for us, we always ask, well, why do you want an alignment? Is it pulling? Is it, you know, are you having tire wear? Are you, oh, no, you know, I have a shake when going down the road, you know, okay. on the freeway speeds. And so it's just kind of really when they just throw that stuff out there, they're thinking that an alignment's going to fix it or whatever the case may be. So it's kind of just diving into what the actual problem symptoms are.
And that's a great example right there. Because, I mean, people have come in for all kinds of vibrations, and they want an alignment. So mm-hmm. they've decided for themselves that that's going to be the repair.
Yeah.
If we don't answer, if our industry doesn't ask them, you know, tell us what you've got, then one of the things that we like to ask folks is do you feel it in the seat of your pants, the steering wheel, or the whole car?
Mm-hmm.
So that vibration kind of tells us what it is.
Where it's
just to be clear, because no one has said it, but alignment does not cause a vibration.
A minute.
Yeah.
It
under any
yeah.
circumstances for any reason.
Well, I beg to differ with you.
Okay.
All right, if the alignment's bad and the tire's cupped real bad, then the tire becomes a
yeah,
vibration.
But it'll be cuffed all the way around.
No, you're right. I agree with you.
Yeah, so it'll be a constant something
all
like that.
The time.
Yeah, vibration is a completely separate animal than alignment. But yes, we hear that all the time.
Okay,
all right. Not to get in the business.
No,
yeah.
That's fine. That's fine. And I remember some really tough. You want me to turn off your microphone?
No.
All right. Can you put your microphone up a little
oh,
bit?
Oh, stop. Just get over
would
it.
Would you relax? They can hear me just fine. I talk like super loud.
I'm looking at the screen.
I don't care what you're looking at.
I think we have a caller, too.
Oh, we do?
Do you want to get... Do
Wait
we have a caller, Gil?
No callers.
Oh, okay.
Pay attention.
I thought I was hearing the wrench, just barely, but I thought I was hearing it.
She's...
What's in that
stop
coffee?
It.
Hand me that coffee. I need what she have. She is having.
I was trying to get you guys out of it.
But I think, too, going back to that, I think so much of it, too, depends on your front counter staff for us. Because people, if you allow people to just come in and say, hey, I want an alignment, you're really not doing that customer a favor without asking them more. Or check my brakes. And they're having a symptom totally unrelated to what a brakes would do.
Not to mention, they pick it up, they leave, they drive 3 miles down the road, it's still happening, they come back and they go, well, you guys suck at alignments.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
it's just being proactive at the front counter for staff and employees.
So if we ask you lots and lots of questions, we're trying to save you time and money.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot. I had a complaint the other day about another shop, actually one of my shops, and they had taken it in and told them that the alignment was fine. And then they took him into the shop and they showed him the screen. And one of the square boxes of the four was red.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Caster.
Sorry. And no, you're right. It was a caster.
Yeah.
And folks, what we're looking at is when we hook your car up to our alignment machine, it's really important to make sure the back wheels are following the front wheels.
Yep.
It's really important that all the specifications are close. Now, there's always a window for each one of the specifications, and there's three specifications for your front tires and two specifications for your back tires, sometimes three.
Yeah, sometimes
there's
two.
Yeah. So when you
sometimes there's caster, but yeah, sometimes there's toe, and then less times there's even caster. But go ahead. Yes,
but camber for sure.
Oh, for sure.
For sure. Then we also have to have a center line where the back tires are pushing on the front tires, and we can't have the back tires way to the left or way to the right.
Yep.
So that's center line. Sometimes we look at the screen, and it's red, but it's 6 degrees, and the specification is 7 to 9.
Well, yeah. So this is kind of interesting because I have this conversation a lot. of the three angles, toe, camber, caster, two of them are tire wearing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Toe and camber are tire wearing. Caster is not a tire wearing angle. So if it's slightly out of spec, and a lot of ours, because they're lifted and they're lowered and they're modified and stuff like that, they will be slightly out of, that's basically, how far the left front is in front or in back of the right front. And basically, we just use that to account for pulls, typically, mm-hmm. you know, steering wheel return, stuff like that. So if that's out, it's not going to wear your tires.
Well, that's true 99% of the time.
Right.
Let me give you a good example. It's the Ford van. They lay the tires over on their side when you turn right and left.
Yeah.
They have 6, 7, 8 degrees of caster on them.
Yeah.
And so but the key is when you got the Ford van, and many of them that have the high caster numbers, as you roll the tires to the right and the left, they both wear the outside edge evenly.
Right.
So if they're outside wedge air, it's slightly different than the rest of the tire.
So don't run your vans on a NASCAR track.
Yeah. But the idea is that once we look at that, we say, okay, that's acceptable wear because of the alignment specifications.
Yeah,
but this guy was just mad because the thing was red. And I said to him, if this was one half of a degree out, 1 degree out, I wouldn't have spent your money to do it either.
We're talking tenths of a degree.
Yeah, and we're talking about the thickness of a human hair.
Right.
You're talking big money to get it green
parts,
that's not worth it if it's not a tire wearing issue.
Yeah. And that's, you know, if you look at the tires and they're wearing fine, then it's okay to send it out with one black corner of the, or one red corner of the car,
right.
of
mm-hmm.
the four corners. So
yeah.
Alrighty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. 46 minutes after the hour. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan, Andy, and my wife, Renee. And if you'd like to ask a car question, we're more than happy to have you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange is in Phoenix. Phil's been around since 1968. If you've ever driven up and down Washington at 40th Street in Washington on the north side of the street, you'll see Automatic Transmission Exchange. We call it ATE. They've been around a long time. Phil's been around a long time. He's been around since the automatic transmission first came out. So it's important to have that kind of skill level, because as you have to have fundamentals before you can work on the new electronics. So if you have a car question, or if you have a transmission question, or if you want someone to drive with you and you can demonstrate the problem, then Automatic Transmission Exchange, if you live in Phoenix, that's where you need to go. Susan, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, because I'm on my Bluetooth. I have a problem. I have a Hyundai 2013, and my car is making this noise. It's not actually a noise. It's every time I put the brakes on and then start driving again, my locks go on and off and on and off and on and off.
Your door locks?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's weird.
Yeah, can you... I've never heard of that before, mm-mm. ever. Does it happen every time you drive it and you stop and then you start?
Every time.
Okay. Do you have a garage that you go to, or would you like me to suggest one?
Yeah, I don't have a garage.
Okay. What part of town do you live in?
I live in Levine.
Okay. I may take you up to 38th Avenue and Indian School. Here's the good news. 38th Avenue and Indian School is Larry Harker's Auto. H-A-R-K-E-R-S. Harker's Auto. And you need a seasoned guy, and you need to demonstrate it to them. So
okay.
He's going to sit in the car with you, and he's going to say, take me for a ride. Then more than likely, he's going to want to switch places. We'd have to drive and see what it is. Now, I don't know if we left a door open on this Hyundai, if the door locks would stay open. If we were driving down the road and we opened up a door, would the door locks flash on us? I don't know the answer to that.
Like a door dar switch or a latch or something?
Exactly.
Well, in that case, the dome light would be on. Have you ever paid attention? Does your dome light stay on?
No, nothing stays on. And the thing is they're not slick. It's just the noise, like it's doing it in the door, but it's not doing it, like the little buttons on the side are not opening and shutting. It's like inside the door.
Okay. Is it inside the driver's door?
It sounds like it's all four doors going off.
Okay. All right.
Wow.
That's weird. It is so weird.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the good news is that you can actually take somebody for a ride and let them listen to that. Because the only two things in the door that move is the electric motor that rolls the window up and down, and then we have this solenoid that simply goes out and in, and that activates your door locks. And it activates the latch in the door, but it also it activates the button that tells you whether it's locked or unlocked. Does it have anything to do with when you accelerate or decelerate?
Yeah, it sometimes will do it when I slow down and then speed back up, like in traffic, it'll do it again. It'll start going bling, 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 bling.
Okay, so you have an audio noise as well.
Yeah, you can hear it. It's a definite, you can hear the noise going off and on. It's like, it goes off and on like three times.
Okay. We've never had that question before, and I've never fixed that kind of car before. But I am sending you to the right place. Larry Harkers, I'd like you to call him and make an appointment. Tell him you have this noise, and you'd like someone to take it from driving. You say to them, I'm not going to have your technician for 2 hours. I can demonstrate this by just driving around the block or maybe a mile down the road and back. Sometimes people take our technicians, and they'll bring them back the next day. So but the good news is, Susan, is you can make it happen, and probably only 20% of the people can make it happen, so it's intermittent. But if you can make it happen, this should be an easy one. Now, I would like very much if you would have the shop that fixes it call me so that I could learn from the repair.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
All right. I will try it. I will make an appointment so I can see. Are they open on Saturday?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, but I don't think so. Now, if I give you the phone number, will that help you?
Yeah, I can look it up.
Okay.
That would be great if you can give me the phone number.
Okay. Well, the last, look up behind you, Larry Harker's right
here,
there.
Oh, here, I got it right here. It's 602-278-5558. And it looks like they're just Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 5:30.
Okay.
All righty. Well, good luck to you, Susan. Thanks. Thank you very much. Abdullah, how are you today? How can I help you?
I'm good. Good morning. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you.
I have a question. I have a Mercedes. Do you hear me well? There's an echo.
Yeah, we're having problems with the echo ourselves. I'm going to turn off the three microphones real quick, and I'm just going to give you mine. Let's try it again, Abdul. Try it again.
Okay. So I have a GLC that I purchased last year.
Okay.
And whenever I drive, I don't know if it's coming from the wheel or from the transmission.
Okay. Huh.
My son says that all four-wheel drive do that. Okay. I'm not sure.
All right.
When is the noise present?
Hold on a minute. Hold on. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. When is the noise present?
Only when I back up. Drive back.
So he's driving along and he's got a steady throttle. And it doesn't happen when you accelerate, but it happens when you back off the throttle.
Only when I back off. It's only the first time.
Okay.
Oh, it's only when it's in reverse.
Okay.
In reverse.
In reverse.
Whew, I don't know. Would something be rubbing?
Well, he says it's only the first time, so it's almost like the drive shaft is like unloading,
okay,
like a U-joint or a carrier bearing,
okay,
or something like that, where it's unloading the drive shaft.
And if it's got a bad joint, then the first time in the morning is going to make that joint kind of be squeaky, like an old guy getting out of bed. He's kind of squeaky,
yeah.
But then as during the days go on, everything is fine.
Yeah.
So do you have a shop that works on your Benz?
It should be under cover, you know. I just got it last year.
Okay. Oh, it's brand new?
It's brand new, yeah.
Okay. My suggestion would be this. Take it to the dealer, and you write a note and hang it from the rearview mirror so you can talk to the technician. And I would say, I would have the note and say, I have a noise that only happens the first time in the morning, and it's when I back up, and it can be described as a squeak or a clunk or a vibration. It'll only happen first
like
thing
a
in the morning.
Sound, something, like a metal banging.
All right. Well, so you're going to say that. And then you're going to say, please don't start this car and back it up until a technician has a chance to do it because I left it overnight. Mm-hmm. Now, if the technician just got your car, then he's going to be really glad that you communicated to him how to make it happen and what to watch for.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right, good luck to you. And so, Abdul, we got him taken care of, and we've got a noise first thing in the morning. And that happens a lot. But you're right. I think it is a drive shaft issue, and but it's brand new car.
And he said it was a four wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
All wheel drive.
What if it's like a GL or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he said it was a GL.
GL.
It's four wheel drive. Because he said his son says that all four wheel drives do that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go to the phone. Who have we got? Yo.
Jim.
Jim. Good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
This isn't so much a repair question, but an oil change question. A newer car that has 520 in it, I've been told any shop cannot put standard oil in it, that it has to be synthetic. Is that true, and why?
Okay, well, they only make a 520 in a synthetic. So.
Right, but if I wanted to, say, run a regular standard grade 1030 or something in it.
Okay, that's a bad idea. Here, let me just give you an example. Put your hands together like you're praying to your wife for forgiveness for coming home late, okay? Now, rub them together as hard as you can and push on them, okay? That's called friction. So I'm suggesting to you, what would be better to go in there and provide a layer of lubrication between your hands? Peanut butter or sewing machine oil?
Well, sewing machine oil, I guess. Sewing machine oil.
No, that's true. So we're now in this thing where it's really going to bug us when we're going to go to a 0.8 and a 0.10. Mm-hmm. We don't even know where we're going to go when 0 doesn't work. So the idea is a 0.20, you should drive that 10, 12,000 miles. A 0.20 is a perfect synthetic. It's not going to consume any more oil with a 0.20 than if you put a 10.30 in it. The issue is a 520.
Yes,
I'm sorry, 020.
I've got a 520.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sorry. I used a 020, but the 520 is going to give you the best fuel economy. It's going to give you the best protection. It's going to cause less wear in your car, and it's just a matter of us older guys getting past the peanut butter part of oil. Thicker is better. It's going to love me more. But what are we running in our diesels? We're running a 540.
40. Yeah.
So it flows like a 5 weight when it's cold, and flows like a 40 weight when it's hot. But your 520 is the same thing. It flows like a 5 weight when it's cold, but the newer model cars for the last 4 years, maybe five years,
yeah.
The 520 is exactly the right oil. Now, we stock that now because of the call for it. There is a huge call for it.
You know, how long
is the longest you can run it?
A synthetic.
That's my last question.
10 to 12,000. Let me ask you, how many miles a year do you drive?
Probably 15,000, most of it highway.
Okay, I would go a year and I would change your oil in April. And that means you go through the summer, the worst season we have, and you go through the summer with fresh oil. And I would change it once a year. But when I got past the 10,000 mile mark, I'd be checking the oil like every other fill up.
Yep, and I do that. I've probably got 12,000 on it right now, and I do check it.
Okay, and you'll know if it's going to use oil. Now, you don't add a quart of oil until it hits the add mark. Okay, that's one quart low.
Okay.
So, no, I think you're doing exactly what you ought to do. That's a good job.
Okay.
All right.
Mark, I appreciate the help.
You bet, Jim. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And the lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. You are here on KKNT every Saturday from 10 to noon. Well, good morning, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and if you'd like to join us, this is a car show, and for the next hour, we answer questions about your car repair questions or some argument that your husband and wife are having, and both of them feel like that they're right, and so we'll break the tie one way or another. My name's Mark Salem, and sitting here next to me is my son, Alan, my daughter, Andy, and my wife, Renee. And between all of us, we've been in the repair business for more than 100 years. I guess my wife's 100 years. The rest of us are a little less than that number. Okay. Well, that's the cumulative total of us. But you and I have been 39 years.
Yes.
And so the kids fill up the rest of that.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. On the west side of town, there are three S&S Tire and Auto Service. There's Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Why I like S&S Tires is that they have a very comprehensive line of tires. So if you stop by and you say to them, can I have the good, better, best price, they're capable of giving you one number which covers four tires, installed, balance, all the FET, all the sales tax, all that stuff together. Then you can decide what you want to do. And obviously the good, better, best scenario is the price is also good, better, best. So you'll match that up. So S&S has that kind of a tire inventory where they can actually give you those three numbers. So they have tires from wheelbarrows to tractors and everything in between. And they do front end work, alignment, suspension, and everything related to tires as well as oil changes. So if you're on the west side and you want tires, or if you need tires, or if you want to explore early, you know, tires and you don't yet need them, then S&S Tire and Auto Service is the place I would suggest you try. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Last hour we were talking about vibrations. And have a caller?
Yeah, Nick.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for reminding me. Nick, good morning. How can we help you?
Hi, good morning. So I've got a 2005. Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. 2005 Honda Accord. And I was hearing some clicking noise under the steering wheel.
Okay.
I looked it up online and watched the video. And it was due to a air mix controller or air mix actuator.
It's called the Blendor.
Actuator? It's Blendor. Yeah, several names for it.
Okay.
So someone suggested that the sensors get a little bit dirty. You take it off, clean it out, and it'll be working again.
Okay.
So I did that, took it out, cleaned it out, and now when I put it back in, I either get only hot air or only cold air on the driver's side.
Okay. Well, the hard part is there's a diagnostic procedure that you kind of missed out, and then when you took it apart, I don't think you have the skills to know if the hinge is bad, if the motor's bad, if there's something that's bent or some heat-related, because the ductwork you're working with is plastic. And so it's not uncommon for us to have a problem with the door opening and closing, and then we take a little grinder in there and kind of clean up the area that's disformed.
Deformed.
Yeah, deformed. Thank you for that. So those are the kinds of things that we do when we go in there. It's not uncommon for us to find half of a cheeseburger. It's not uncommon for us to find linkage that's bad. It's not uncommon for us to find distorted plastic. There's lots of things. Now, think of this is a Y, okay? You have the two coming in, and then at the stalk of the Y, the vertical portion of the letter Y, that's where the blend door's at. So cold is on the left, hot is on the right. So if you want all cold on the left, then you shut off the hot on the right. So the door swings right to shut off hot air. If you want a blended amount, then the door goes to the middle.
But there's a potentiometer in the middle, and it doesn't sound like he can find the middle, so it's...
But, you're right, but there is also sometimes a process to open and close the door.
That's what I'm saying, like a recalibration procedure to where you show where the limits are. Okay, this is the limit, there's your range. Right now, it may just be going all the way to hot, it sees a resistance where it can't go any further, and it shuts the motor down, but it can't see anything in the middle of that, so it goes all the way cold, and then stops, and then all the way hot and stops, but it doesn't recognize the in-between.
Most of the time, if not all the time, when we do that reprogramming and letting the blendor see its parameters...
Relearn.
We're doing it with a scanner.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't have a scanner.
Right, yeah. Right.
But if you want, you can go to YouTube University and ask them for a relearn procedure for your 05 Acura. Now, sometimes in the older cars, and I'm being silly here, so forgive me, But sometimes you hop in and you turn the key on, and then you go air conditioning, and then you go to heat. You count to five. You wave a dead duck over your head. You honk the horn twice. You open the door and shut it. And I'm making fun of the process, but it's that way. So the relearn process is that way. There are General Motors out there with a relearn process for the blend door.
Yep.
And we have to open the door and have it hit, and then the computer can see, oh, the amp draw just went up. And then the movement of the door just stopped. So I know that's the parameter to the right. So the door goes to the left, zzz, and then all of a sudden it hits, but there's no increase in amp draw. So the computer goes, well, it's not open all the way or shut all the way. So those are the things that we use when we look at a scanner. How long did it take you to get that blend door out?
Well, I think I'm just about done with it. I mean, it's a pain to get in there, and it's upside down. So
yeah, and I'm impressed.
It's about a half hour.
Okay,
oh, wow.
I'm impressed that you did that, because frankly, on a 1 to 10 scale, most of the blend doors in the cars that we work on would take a skill level of 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So I'm surprised that you tried that, but I'm impressed that you got it out and got it in, because that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So your skills are a tad above than most people that we deal with. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Well, they're not at your level. I didn't get it fixed. But,
yes.
You, yeah, yeah.
I understand. Yeah. All right. Well, good luck to you, Nick. Thank you very much.
Right.
And we deal with blend doors a lot, and the symptoms typically are...
Stuck cold.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stuck hot.
Or yeah, deep floor.
Different side
and,
to side.
Yeah.
Floor center,
defrost.
Floor okay. center defrost. Floor dash defrost. Noises, clicking noises.
Okay. And yeah. I think people don't, you know, not everyone understands that there's multiple. You know, you get the temperature door, you get a blend door, you know, all the different.
Mode door.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. That's why we have to kind of use words that they can relate to. So when we start talking about, they say the air blows out of the wrong place. Well, defrost is windshield, center vent is what we usually use, and floor vent is a heat for heating up to your feet. And in my truck, you can put cold air to your feet as well.
Right.
So it's important for us to have that kind of communication level in order to say to them, where's the air coming from? And it can be a temperature. What's really kind of caused us, our industry, to really struggle is we have, now the husband can pick 32 and the wife can pick 105.
Right.
And so we have two people in the car that have picked two temperatures that are wildly different. And that gets to be a real big problem, because then the computer has a tough time. We've got a caller, Gil. Who would that be?
That would be Randy.
Randy, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. How you doing? First-time caller. I've been working on cars since the 60s,
uh-huh.
So I've been involved in just about everything. But this is a question that I have for you, because I went online and looked for answers
uh-huh.
on some information, couldn't get it. Here was the issue. I was making sure that my daughter was maintaining her 2016 Hyundai Sonata.
Okay.
And so she's been doing a good job maintaining that. She's been taking it to a place that, you know, takes care of cars in San Diego,
okay.
California. And she drove out to see me. I'm in Arizona, obviously.
Okay.
And when she came out to see me, when she was getting ready to leave, I said, well, let me just double check what the service tech did to your car, make sure all the levels are correct and everything like that. So I pulled out the dipstick, and because the oil was brand new, sometimes it's very difficult to see where it really is sitting. Have you ever seen that?
Of course. Mm-hmm. You betcha. You betcha.
Yeah. So here's what happened. I looked at it, and then I went, I'm not sure where this is at. So I cleaned it, put it back in again, pulled it back out, checked the dipstick again. I'm going, where the heck is this level? So we finally found it, and I went, he put too much oil in your car. Now, to give you a reference of where that oil level was, there are actually two dots on the dipstick. One dot is add oil, and the other one is full.
2 minutes.
Correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay. It was about the same distance as that gap between those two dots above the full mark.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm guessing that's about a quart?
The difference, yes. And just so that everybody knows, not everybody has a dot for the low and dot for the high. We have a checkerboard. We have a variety of ways to denote add and full, but yours has a hole in the dipstick or a dot. So, yes. And it sounds like you have a quart more than you should have.
Right. Now, what I was trying to explain to her, and she just kind of gave me a look like, well, okay. I said, you can increase crankcase pressure. You can damage rings. You can blow seals. And probably a number of other things, correct?
Some of those things most of us would disagree with, but you're right. There's no good that can come out of a quart over. And one of the things that does happen sometimes is we start foaming the oil. And so we get it too close to the crankshaft, and all of a sudden the oil turns to a foam, and we're aerating the oil. And in the old days, too much oil would blow seals and stuff like that. But with the newer cars, we're sucking on them pretty hard with the PCV valve system. So we're not likely to build so much pressure in there, but it's not a good idea.
When we think about over full, I mean, a quart is over full, and you know, obviously, but I mean, we see cars in here that have a capacity of 6 and come in with 11. I mean, you're talking about people who drain the wrong fluid. You know, they'll drain the tranny fluid in their driveway and then fill it up with oil. I had a guy in a Razor do that just the other day, and so you know, they add. And so that kind of stuff, I mean, that's a little excessive. But, I mean, I don't know that I would be ultra concerned about one quart. I try not to do it. But when you say over full, we're thinking 3, 4, 5, 6 quarts.
And what happened is that sometimes happens is it calls for 3 1/4 quarts.
Yeah.
And so somebody dumps in 4. And it's not uncommon for us to have that happen at our shop.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And we have guns, and we squirt oil in your car in 11 seconds. So sometimes the guys mess up and put it a little full. And if it's brought to our attention, then we deal with it. But here's my question to you two. When was the last time we had a problem with somebody that had it over full, other than the fact they were uncomfortable? We oil leaks or any related stuff?
It was within the last probably 2 or 3 years. It wasn't something that we did, but it was, I mean, it was so full. I want to say Jason one time. I can't think of what it is. It was so full it was causing, I have to think about it for a second. But it's not common. Not common.
I don't know that I would do anything. There's two ways to drain it. You can pull the drain plug on it real quick and drain it out and put the plug back in it. Some of us have tools that we can stick a hose down the dipstick tube and suck some of the oil out of it. But I think what you need to do is look at the owner's manual to see exactly what it has. Tell your daughter to tell them it's 3 7, 3 75, it's 3 3/4, or it's 4 or 4 1/2. That's what needs to happen. Yeah. But you could have had a youngster on there that thinks everything holds 5 quarts. He's going to get in trouble when he does a diesel that holds 12 quarts because the diesel's not going to like 5. But in your particular case, I think many of your concerns are unwarranted, although I would bring it to the shop's attention because they shouldn't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, and that's what I told her, that it was a... She needed to take it back in, show them, let them deal with it. I did see something on YouTube that was pretty ingenious. A guy used just a small, like not PVC, but a neoprene little hose or something. He stuck it down in the dipstick hole, which kind of surprised me. So it was small enough, and he connected a syringe to it and just sucked out the additional oil, which is a good idea. The only thing I thought was a bad idea is he didn't put a safety on there, and if that hose happens to drop down inside the crankcase, he's got a real problem.
Well, not only that is I mean, the biggest horse syringe we can find, if you're going to take a half a quart out of there, you're going to be there for a while.
Or even a turkey baster,
you're going to be there a while.
Yeah.
So,
a turkey baster wouldn't work because it wouldn't suck it hard enough.
And there's a lot of them, but you're right. It's really, she's going to be okay to go back to California. Just tell her to stop by the shop. This is their problem to fix. So she'll be okay. All righty. Well, listen, thank you very much, Randy. Thank you very much. Hey, Gil, I turned down Alan's mic. Does that make any difference on the echo?
A little bit, but you can still hear it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to bring him down a little bit more because he has his microphone in Wisconsin, and we're sitting here in Missouri. And so I'm bringing him down because he's louder than anybody else. And so I'm bringing him down thinking that his microphone is out there in Never Never Land, and it's picking up everything from all of us. And then Andy's snoring, so that makes a big difference, too. All right, we'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 24 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Mark Salem, Renee, my wife, my daughter, Andy, who, what does your business card say? Hold on. What does your business card say?
Full-time babysitter of the men at Salem Boys.
Yep, that's exactly right. And she is the full-time babysitter for the guys. And her biggest babysitting job has to be sitting next to you.
Probably.
Yeah, which is my son, Alice.
Some days are better than others.
Yeah. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Action Auto is up at I-17 in Deer Valley. He's a good guy. I've known Tom since the late 80s. Actually, early 80s, between 80 and 85, I'm pretty sure is when we met him. And he's a really good guy. He's honest. He's dependable. He's been around a long time. And if you meet him and meet his staff, you'll understand why I recommend them. So if you live anywhere near Deer Valley and I-17 and you don't have a repair shop, I'll tell you what I tell everybody. Stop by, make an appointment for an oil change, and see how they treat you. See how, you know, if they come back, if a shop comes back and gives you a big laundry list of stuff to do, that might be a sign that that might happen all the time. So you can make up your mind, but if you don't have a shop, I-17 in Deer Valley, Action Auto. He's on the northwest corner of that intersection, and he's a good guy, I promise. Let's go to the phones, and I think the first caller here is Christopher. Christopher, good morning.
Well, Mark, Christopher dropped off, so let's go to Lee.
Okay. Lee, good morning to you. You're up now, and we can help you.
Thank you. In a gotta da vida, honey. I had to do that with a reverb you have.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Let's see. I have a 2015 Tacoma, and the maintenance required light came on because I'm past my oil change. Is there any particular way you could actually get that to go off without having to buy a scan gauge tool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a scan tool on that one.
Okay, go ahead.
What?
Go ahead.
it'll say it in your owner's manual, how to turn it off.
Okay.
And sometimes what happens is they want you to I'm going to give you an example that seems to be the popular one, is turn the key to the on position and then throttle. The engine's off, by the way. Throttle to the floor 2 or 3 times. And that's a common one. It could very well be that there's a reset button on your steering wheel. There's a cancel button for your cruise control. There's a variety of reasons, but almost always there's going to be a process in your owner's manual.
Yeah, so on our Dodges, we have the gas pedal one. So you turn it to not engine starting, but just auxiliary, pump the gas pedal 3 times, and do a process. But on my Toyota Camry, you actually just turn it on, not the engine on, but just turn the accessories on and then turn it to like trip A and then turn the engine off and then turn it off or on and then off. It's a process like that, but I have it written down, but that's how my Toyota is and I can do it myself.
Okay. Chevrolets have the three pedal thing as well. So does that help you out?
Sure does. I appreciate it.
Okay. Good enough. Thank you very much. And Gil, you said we had somebody else?
Yes, we have John.
John, good morning. How can we help you today?
Good morning, Mark. I got to say, it's pretty entertaining when you have the whole family there.
Yeah, well, we had to bail Alan out of jail to get him here. but I have to get him back right after the show. Anyway, well, thank you for that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I've been listening to you for a bunch of years, and you definitely keep me company on Saturday. A lot of good info. Appreciate it.
2 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you for being nice.
All right, so I got a 2011 Volkswagen CC. It's got the 2-liter TSI, 115,000 miles. So it has hesitation, kind of at low throttle. And I know there's the whole carbon buildup on these, direct port injection?
Direct port injection. Or actually, it's not port. It's direct injection. We're going to send the fuel into the cylinder as opposed to into the intake to be mixed with air. So we're spraying fuel right into the cylinder.
Right. So it winds up building up a whole bunch of carbon on the top of the intake valves. And Yeah, so what I wound up doing is I have a shady tree guy that I brought it over to, and I had him do the carbon cleanup, and it helped with the hesitation a little bit, but yet it still has a hesitation at low throttle that I just don't know where to go from here. That was kind of what I was looking at. No codes have been thrown. So I don't know what would be a good next step for me.
Well, if you want to make two guesses, I'll guess just like YouTube University. I would clean, I'd buy some mass airflow sensor cleaner and clean the mass airflow sensor. But I want to tell you, if you get aggressive with it or you don't follow the directions, then you break that little wire, you just cost yourself $200 or $300. So there is a process. Now, I would also clean the throttle blades. And that's going to be with the engine off. You get somebody to hold the throttle wide open. You get this long screwdriver with the rag tape to the end of it. You spray that with some carb cleaner, and you just kind of polish around the bores and clean the area around the throttle blades. One of those two things, I think you have about a 75% chance of being able to pull that off.
Okay.
All right.
Can I give you a quick follow-up?
Just a second, because I'm up against a break, so please hold on. I'll meet you back here in about 2.5-3 minutes, okay? So I'm Mark Salem, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and if you'd like to talk cars with us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we're going to go back to John, because John had a new VW, an 11 VW, and had 115,000 miles on it. And he was talking about direct fuel injection, and I'll explain that in a minute. But you had another question, John, so I'm all ears.
Yeah, it's kind of just a follow-up on how to prevent the carbon buildup. I'm doing some reading on it. I don't know whether do you go and use like installing a catch can to prevent the oil from recirculating through the system.
There's nothing you can do.
Oh,
here's
that's
the
not
deal.
What I wanted to hear.
All right, well here's the answer. Okay, this is the technical answer, so you know I'm betting you can follow. We're going to run oil down the intake valve stem. We need to lubricate as the valve opens and closes. Okay, we typically had the injector pointing right at the back of the valve, so the valve kept as the injector sprayed. It sprayed fuel on the back side of the valve. Then the valve opens up and we get fuel and air. Well, when they took the injector out of the intake runner and they put it directly into the cylinder, what are we going to do with all that oil that comes down that valve stem? What are we going to do with it?
It's going to get kicked on there.
That's it. And there's been times we've pulled heads off where it's plugged solid. The entire intake port is plugged solid. And you get out your hammer and your chisel and you beat the hell out of it. So the idea is no one knows what to do. And there's no fix what to do. Now, some of the guys are saying that they're using a heavier oil, which leaves less film on the back side of it. But I suppose that you could probably find something to put into the air system. Here's the problem. The air system is a good idea because the air is going to be delivered by the intake valve. So if you want to put some kind of heavy-duty chemical and use it to wash the back of the valve, here's the problem, though. This is not an area of heat. There's not a lot of heat in this area. So there's nothing to spray the oil off the back of the intake, so it just gets a little hotter, and oil oxidizes at about 325 degrees to 500. Oxidation means it turns to a solid. So after we start building up the solid, then it might as well be charcoal. And getting it out of there is just impossible. Now, the only thing you could do is romp and stomp that thing every once in a while. And
yeah,
that might help you.
Tune-up, right?
Just kind of pretend like you're drag racing somebody, or that your wife has a beer between her legs and you want to just spill it all over. Just kind of just romp and stomp that thing and run it hard. Run it like you stole it, as they said, you know, when we were younger. And that's about all. There's no fix for it right now. There's a lot of people out there that are coming to my shop and saying, we've got this, and this is the niftiest thing in the world, and the machine's going to cost you $400 a month, but you have to buy our chemicals. And then all of a sudden we're figuring out that it's $400 for the machine and it's $500 for the chemicals, and we're out of grand.
Wow.
And there's no science behind this machine that's supposed to fix this problem. So everybody with direct injection is having it. It's not anything to do with Chevy, Ford, Honda, Toyota, Dodge, Cadillac. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with direct injection. So that's all you got. Okay?
Okay. I appreciate the help, Mark.
You're welcome. Thank you. And Gil, have we got anybody sitting in the wings?
No, lines are open.
Okay, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. I just want to cover something we covered the first hour, and that's the communication at the front counter.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for us to start with the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, year, make, and model, and miles is important.
Mm-hmm.
So we can kind of decide what we're going to do. But when they say I have 300,000 miles and they've got an oil leak, we kind of look at the PCV valve and some of that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of gives us a hint. But sticking with the symptoms is important.
Yes.
And when it comes to self-defense for car expense, here's something that I want you, to, especially ladies, to know that this is acceptable. You go into a shop and they tell you you need a transmission service. You say to them, you know, let me get my owner's manual and you show me where it says I need a transmission service at 30,000 miles. Most of the time they won't do that because they know the owner's manual says 75 or 100. Then they're going to say, well, this is Arizona and the manual's not written for Arizona because we're really in a hellhole hot. The problem with that is you'd smile and say to them, well, you know what? Next time I come in, or would you just get an Arizona owner's manual for my car? And then I'll just buy it at the parts department. So could you order me one? Because they don't make one for Arizona. And even though people say that all the time, there is no owner's manual. It's for all 50 states and probably Mexico and South America as well. So it's an issue of defending yourself. Right now, we have a lot of newer model cars, probably from 10 and north of 10, 2010, where all this maintenance from 0 to 75 used to be there, and now it's not. So we're having to make up our own maintenance schedules and telling people, and I know a transmission shop that tells everybody, regardless of how old your car is, you need to change your oil at 30,000 miles. Well, that's pretty self-serving. That's pretty self-serving for a transmission shop to say that. Not to mention the fact that the old transmission, 4 quarts and a filter, used to be $125. Now we have synthetic fluid, and when they start doing that and adding one or two filters to it, now we're triple that much money. So it's kind of convenient for a transmission shop to say, oh, you need to have, change your oil at 30,000 miles, that's what's best for you. That's not what's best for you, that's what's best for them. 602-508-0960, we'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. It's 44 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock, or after the hour of 11 o'clock, I should say. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is up in North Phoenix. They're off of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Strictly Diesel is a great place to go if you like Strictly Diesel people. He does foreign and domestic light trucks. He doesn't do the big trucks, but he's really good. Nate is really good at what he does. He also sells parts 24 hours a day on their website, strictlydiesel.com. So if you're in the area or if you can't find a diesel shop that you like or think doesn't have the skills to deal with your diesel, may I suggest Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Mike, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Well, good morning. Got a 2003 Honda CR-V. Wife was driving it, and all of a sudden it started acting up, and now she went to her appointment, got back in, and it won't start. It cranks over okay, but it's like it's not getting gas.
Okay. The most important thing is when it cranks over and doesn't start, it's going to be spark or fuel. And we have to figure out
right.
Which one it is. So if you want to...
Go ahead.
If you want to find spark, then you take the spark plug boot off and put a screwdriver in it, have your wife hold on to the screwdriver and just tap the starter a couple times. If she screams and uses bad words, then you have spark. Then you take some carburetor cleaner and spray it into the intake it's what we call throttle blades. Spray some in there, mm-hmm. It'll start and run for a second and then die. But anyway, you said you tried something.
Well, I recently changed the plugs and the coils.
And it hasn't run since then?
It did run. I went for a test drive. Everything was good. Didn't drive it for a few days, and then she drove it, and then it started acting up.
Okay. It's entirely possible. Now, when you took the coils off of the top of the spark plug, you know there's a little rubber boot that connects the coil to the spark plug?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those go bad a lot. And when you do spark plugs, you should always do the boots. But it's typically an engine miss, and it's not going to kill all four or all six of your cylinders on your engine. Now, this is important. We don't want to chase our tail, so it's not important what you did before. We're not going to go in and verify your work. We're going to start with fuel and spark. And so all that we need to know as an industry is it cranks over at the normal speed, but it doesn't catch or start, and it has gasoline in it. Those are the things that we want to hear. Now, at the end of the day, when we fix it, then we can answer all those why questions. Why did it do this, and why after I did that? But once we fix it, then we'll deal with it then. How many miles are on your CRV?
177.
Okay. Well, it could be a crank sensor, a cam sensor. It could be a fuel pump. Have you ever put a fuel pump in it?
Yeah, recently I just changed that out. Okay. That was fun.
All righty. Yeah, it is. Did you replace the fuel pump relay?
No.
Okay. Did you replace just the pump, or did you do the whole sending unit?
The whole sending unit.
Okay, good. All right, well, look in your owner's manual and see if there's a fuel pump relay. Chances are it'll look just like the air conditioning relay. Sometimes you can switch the air conditioning relay with the fuel pump relay, and if it starts and runs, then you kind of know what to do. Okay?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Mike. Dick, you're up next. How can I help you?
Okay, greetings from East Mesa.
Thank you.
I have an old car I'm restoring. I'm trying to get to the overdrive. I think it's a BorgWarner. Wonder if you know of a shop out here in the East Valley that may be able to work on that. Most people don't.
Is it out of the car or is it in the car?
It's in the car.
Okay. If it's in the car, I only know of one shop that's very capable of dealing with your transmission, but he only deals with shops. He doesn't do any retail work.
Okay.
And in his defense, that's a huge part of the relationship, but it's also a huge draw on your income stream, because oftentimes you spend hours with customers, and he wants us to do the initial diagnosis and stuff like that. You're in East Mesa, yes?
Yes.
Does the car drive right now?
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right. I'm not capable of suggesting other shops in this environment because I don't have their permission. But if you brought that shop to that car to us, we would then check it out and we would deliver it to this wholesaler who we've used a lot. And he pulls rabbits out of his hats, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, there's been cars that we've been able to give him specific symptoms, like that Dodge. And he said, look at the inlet. The wire harness that goes to the transmission, and if there's a little shunt in there, then take that out and plug it in. And we did that, and that fixed it. Do you remember that?
We added. It was a noise in the converter. Is that the one you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. No.
Noise filter?
There was some kind of a pigtail that you unplug the harness, and you put this pigtail in it, and then you plug it in. I thought that was something.
Okay.
But he's very capable. He's very capable on the old cars. I wouldn't have any problem with giving him anything from the 50s or the 60s at all. Now, what year is your old car?
1948.
Okay. I still think he has the capability, but he also has this capability to say, I don't know. And so you bring it to us. What we're going to do is we're going to bill it straight through. So whatever he charges you, you're going to get shop supplies, environmental charges, and some sales tax. Now, you have warranty through both of us. You have it through my shop, and you have it through him. So you're not going to go to him, but I'm still in the food chain. So I'm still there for you. But, yeah, if you bring it in, then talk to Alan or Andy, my daughter or my son, and they'll be able to help you.
Okay.
All right.
Do we need an appointment for that or just
bring it by? Well, obviously Monday mornings and Friday afternoons are kind of hectic, but any other time should be fine.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. And wait, hang on, Dick. All right, Dick, was that a 49?
48 Willys Overland Jeepster.
Okay, I missed it.
48 Willys
Overland Jeepster.
Okay, Willys. I missed that Overland. Because I'm going to write this down and make sure I'm right. Anyway, thank you very much, Dick.
Should we have him call us first to make sure that this is something that he can work on?
Yeah. Dick, why don't you do that? Have you got your pencil handy, Dick?
Sure do.
Okay, 480-598-1234. I named all my kids with an A so I could remember their names, Alan and Andy, and either one of them can help you out.
And they're going to get your phone number for you rather than we ask you for it right now, okay?
Gotcha.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
You bet. Ronnie, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, I've got an echo. I'm hearing myself.
Yeah, I know. We're having that problem.
Ahead, I guess.
Okay.
I've got a question on brakes on the 2000 Jeep Grand Cherokee, but every once in a while my foot will go about halfway down on the pedal, further than normal. It's usually right up, you know, probably a good 6 inches off the floor. And every once in a while it'll go about halfway down, and if I pump the brake, it'll go down just a little bit off the floor. And I still have brakes, but I'm having a feeling that my front brakes are not locking up like usual. I feel like the braking is usually coming from the rear.
Okay. No, you're wrong.
So I'm wondering, is this strictly a master cylinder issue, or is this possibly tied into ABS?
No, because you'd have an ABS light on if you had a problem with one of the wheel cylinders. I am quite sure you have a bad master cylinder. What you're describing is that the master cylinder is bypassing. And I'm going to change everything you said and said, at times when I drive this, the pedal gets firm at different places, sometimes very close to the floor, and when it's normal, it's only got an inch or inch and a half of play on the top end. So intermittently, the stopping point of my brake pedal changes. And if the master cylinder has fluid in it, more than likely it's leaking out of the back of it, but it's connected to a booster, so you're not going to see that. But if it's leaking out of the back of it, which they typically do, then the diaphragm of the brake booster is going to take a beating. And so we need to make sure that we either get the brake fluid out of there or put a master cylinder booster, a combination in there. So, yeah, you can do all kinds of stuff to it if you want, but the easiest thing to do is go around back of some grocery store and make some really hard panic stops, get out and look, and the front tire skid should be about as twice as long as the back tire skid. So all you have to do is look at the skid marks, and if you're hitting on all four corners, then it's going to be a master cylinder bypassing.
Yeah, in which case the fluid is not going down, right?
No, it's not going to go down. It's the cup.
Yeah,
the cup pushes on the cylinder.
I mean my wheels.
Okay. No, the fluid's not going to be going down. The cup, which is about the size of a quarter, no, size of a nickel, it has a rubber lip all the way around it, and when you push it, it doesn't contain the fluid in front of it. So it's leaking past the lip. That's why it's changing its location. That's why sometimes it's firm at the top, sometimes it doesn't get firm till the bottom. And I would imagine that your master cylinder is a very old master cylinder. All right?
Yeah, 140,000 on the car.
Okay, so, well, what the heck do you want? that's six times around there.
Well, I didn't know if it was tied into the ABS possibility. I suspected a master cylinder. I have rebuilt many of them back in the day, but nowadays they just replace them.
Yeah, yeah. No, ABS would chatter your brakes. You'd hear a chatter, and you'd feel a chatter with your pedal. And then if you took a hard right turn and left turn and stopped, you'd also have a chatter in the pedal. And if there was anything serious with your ABS light, then you'd have a trouble code, and the ABS light would come on, and it's typically a yellow light, and basically it's saying to you, I've disabled the ABS because I see a problem. I'm going to give you conventional brakes. But it's not very often, or I don't know if I've ever seen an ABS problem cause this pedal change in firmness that you're describing. All righty. Thank you very much, Ronnie. And Hux, you're up next. Hux, how can I help you?
I've got a Winnebago 2016 on a 1153 chassis. And when I'm listening to 960 and I take the emergency brake off, I get static and can't hear the radio anymore.
Wow. Wow, wow, that's a question I've never answered before.
We've had some weird ones today, huh?
Yeah.
When he takes the e-brake, when he releases the e-brake, the radio goes to static?
Yeah. Now, let's talk about this out loud. The antenna is the biggest problem with AM radio.
Sure.
And so if you intermittently lose a station coming back, and it's a bad connection. And the FM radio doesn't need an antenna, so to speak. So it's not nearly, AM is more dependent on an antenna than an FM radio is. But if he releases the parking brake, right? If he releases that and now all of a sudden he's got static, why wouldn't we have an electrical storm somewhere in that circuit when he releases the brake pedal?
Or it's coming up and pinching a wire, or it's coming up and knocking a ground off or something like that.
Yes, yes, that's right. So when you look at it from that point of view, you're looking at it from some kind of an electrical malfunction or some electrical storm that's contaminating his radio. What's the name of that? Is that the stereo shop that you deal with? Do they take motorhomes in?
No, they wouldn't be able to.
Okay. I would take it over to a shop in Tempe called Sounds to Good to Me. Sounds Good to Me. And I would say to them, I think there's a guy there, the name Mark, and I would say to them, Mark Salem says that you don't have a prayer in hell of fixing this, but I thought I'd give you a try anyway. And that's kind of like dropping the gauntlet.
Okay.
All right. I can't fix that. It's one something that I've never run across before, but the answer to why it's happening is will be there after it's fixed. So once we fix it, then we can explain why they're related. But the only thing that happens on the application of the emergency brake is we turn on the parking brake light.
Right.
And it's a mechanical transaction. It's a mechanical effort. And unless there's some kind of a chafe in the ground system or something like that, I can't imagine why it would have anything to do with your AM radio. But I just don't know the answer to that. Well, good luck to you, Hux. That's the best I can do for you. When we start talking about cars, it's right here on Saturday, every Saturday from 10 to noon, right here on KKNT. My name's Mark Salem. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. You're welcome to send me an email, and if you give me a phone number, I'd appreciate that because I'd like to call you back sometimes to ask you some questions. Drive safe. God bless you. I'll see you next week.